Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Q1 2014 JDSU Earnings Conference Call. My name is Bree, and I will be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. If at any time you require operator assistance, please press star followed by zero, and we will be happy to assist you. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded for replay purposes. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Jim Monroe, Vice President, Corporate Communications. Please proceed, sir.
Thanks, Bree, and welcome to JDSU's Fiscal 2014 First Quarter Earnings Call. Joining me today are Tom Wechter, President and CEO, and Rex Jackson, CFO. David Heard, President of our Network and Service Enablement business, and Alan Lowe, President of our Communications and Commercial Optical Products segment, are also here for Q&A. I'd like to remind you that this call will include forward-looking statements about the company's future financial performance. These statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from management's current expectations. We encourage you to look at our most recent filings with the SEC, particularly the Risk Factors section in Part 1, Item 1A, in our 10-K filed August 23, 2013. The forward-looking statements, including guidance provided during this call, are valid only as of today. JDSU undertakes no obligation to update these statements. Please also note that all results are non-GAAP unless otherwise stated. We include a detailed reconciliation of these non-GAAP results to our GAAP results, as well as a discussion of their usefulness and limitation in today's earnings press release. The release, plus our supplementary slides and historical financial tables, are available on our website. Finally, we are recording this call today and will make the recording available promptly on our website. I'd now like to turn the call over to Tom.
Thank you, Jim. Our first quarter highlighted the advantages of JDSU's diverse portfolio, reflected growth in solutions that support growing bandwidth demand and the expansion of cloud networks, and demonstrated momentum in our adjacent markets. We are executing well against our strategic priorities: collaborative innovation, expansion in high-growth markets, and disciplined focus on operational improvements. JDSU's Q1 revenue was $429 million, at the high end of our guidance range of $410 million-$430 million. Gross margins were 46.3%, and operating margin was 8.3%, above the midpoint of our guidance. Earnings per share was $0.13. We delivered positive operating cash flow for the 28th consecutive quarter, with our cash balance at quarter end of approximately $1.1 billion. We generated $29.5 million of cash from operations in Q1 and completed a senior convertible debt offering of $650 million on favorable terms. We used $100 million of the proceeds to concurrently repurchase 7.4 million shares of JDSU's outstanding common stock, returning value to our shareholders. We intend to use the balance of the proceeds from the convert for general corporate purposes, including potential strategic transactions. Bookings varied by business segment. Book-to-bill for Communications and Commercial Optical Products, or CCOP, was above one, with demand stemming from network capacity build, including 100G solutions, as well as other optical telecom products. Book-to-bill for Network and Service Enablement, or NSE, dropped below one on weak order intake in North America, including the U.S. government. Book-to-bill for Optical Security and Performance Products, or OSP, was approximately one. Overall, JDSU's book-to-bill was below one. JDSU's focus on collaborative innovation continues to drive strong customer adoption of new products. Network-related revenue from new products less than two years old was 64%, marking the 10th consecutive quarter that we have delivered new product revenue ahead of our 50% target. Collaborative innovation is all about matching JDSU innovation expertise with customers' needs. New optical communication solutions like our TrueFlex ROADM, network enablement solutions like the T-Bird 8000 for 100G, our new Jester platform, and next-generation anti-counterfeiting solutions are hitting the mark. Now I'd like to provide commentary on four specific trends, how they are impacting JDSU's performance today, and how we see them evolving. First, network bandwidth demand. The industry is striving to add bandwidth for subscribers using an ever-expanding number of applications across a multitude of connected devices while maintaining quality of service and profitability. In Q1, this trend drove growth for JDS solutions that support the build-out of network capacity, including optical component and network enablement products for 40G and 100G deployment, and broadband access, including FTTX. We believe the current industry focus on core network capacity build-out is a necessary precursor to small cell and LTE deployments, which, though somewhat delayed, will ultimately drive capacity for high bandwidth traffic to even greater levels. In addition, as network capacity is added and the Internet of Things expands, we believe that customers will increasingly turn to service enablement solutions that optimize application performance and the subscriber experience. While it is difficult to know the timing, service enablement investments have typically followed periods of network capacity build-out. JDSU is well-positioned with a service enablement strategy and product pipeline that is aligned with the industry's transition to software-defined networks and the virtualization of network management. Second, cloud networking. The cloud is driving and enabling the proliferation of enterprise and consumer applications. As a result, data centers are expanding, which is driving strong sequential and year-over-year growth of JDSU's optical communication products for the datacom market. JDSU's datacom solutions grew faster than the market in Q1. This trend is further diversifying our customer base to include global web services and social networking companies. Today, the cloud opportunity for JDSU is driven by connectivity and capacity within and between data centers. As this continues, JDSU customers that manage secure cloud-based networks will require the same network and application performance visibility required by public network operators. As a result, we believe continued data center expansion will increase the need for our solutions, providing increased cloud network visibility and control to enable optimized performance. Third, momentum in our adjacent markets. The potential and excitement around gesture recognition applications, including computing, home entertainment, and mobile device interaction, is growing. As expected, we saw strong Q1 growth for our gesture recognition products as we continued the ramp of our second-generation gaming solution. As we have previously noted, Q1 was a peak quarter, reflecting the ramp-up prior to the holiday season. We are pleased by our progress with a variety of customers to develop new gesture applications and believe the early leadership we have established in this market gives us a competitive advantage. Because we have proven reliability while producing in large volume, we are well positioned to be the launch supplier as new applications come to market in 2014 and 2015. And as this happens, we believe the cyclicality of this part of our business will lessen. Overall, commercial lasers revenue in Q1 was flat. JDSU will join Amada, our key fiber laser partner, for an exciting announcement at the upcoming FabTech show in Chicago. We look forward to sharing more about our fiber laser strategy then. We think the future is bright in both of these adjacent markets. And finally, turning to our anti-counterfeiting business and our OSP business, some thoughts on currency trends. Even in the digital age, the need for cash is still growing. As populations soar in major economies in Asia, JDSU is ready to support steady banknet growth driven by the ubiquity, security, and convenience that cash offers. In Q1, JDSU delivered 7% sequential growth in this business as adoption of our next-generation security pigments continued to grow. Today, 44 countries use our next-generation pigment solutions known as Spark in their banknote designs. During the quarter, Spark growth was driven by wins in Africa and Latin America. We also recorded the first order for our new ChromaGuard thread with our lead customer. The ChromaGuard thread foil complements our existing offerings and opens up new real estate for us in currencies worldwide. Moving from market trends, a final comment on our continued progress on operational efficiency. Our supply chain continued to improve as we gained cost efficiencies and lowered inventories for the third consecutive quarter. As a result, we delivered solid margin, gross margin improvements across our three business segments. We were also particularly pleased with the progress of our anti-counterfeiting business, which delivered operating margin of 36.4% at the high end of our target model, while beginning to exit a number of product lines as we discussed last quarter. I'll now turn it over to Rex.
Thank you, Tom. JDSU's consolidated first quarter revenue of $429 million was up 1.8% sequentially and 1.9% year over year. The Americas accounted for $199.2 million, or 46.4% of total revenue, while EMEA contributed $104 million, or 24.3%, and Asia Pacific $125.8 million, or 29.3%. EMEA was up significantly from Q4, while America's revenue was down slightly due to lower North America demand. Asia Pacific revenue was also slightly down sequentially. Gross margin of 46.3% increased from 46.1% in June and 45.8% last year. All three segments expanded gross margins sequentially, including 2 points of improvement in the NSC segment. CCOP margin improved 1.1 points sequentially and increased 1.9 points from last year. Operating expenses were $163.1 million, down slightly from Q4 and up from $154 million from last year, primarily due to FY13 acquisitions and our continuing investments in R&D, yielding operating margin of 8.3%, up from 7.2% sequentially, but down from 9.2% year on year. Net income for the quarter was $30.2 million, or 13 cents per share, essentially flat from $30.4 million, or 13 cents per share last quarter, and down from $35 million, or 15 cents per share last year. Please note our Q1 non-GAAP results exclude, among other items, amortization of acquired technology and other intangibles, stock-based compensation, and restructuring charges. Now moving to the segments, starting with CCOP, which consists of our optical communications and lasers businesses. CCOP revenue for Q1 was $204.6 million, up 12.2% from Q4, and 5% year over year. This growth was driven by renewed telecom product strength and continued growth of our datacom portfolio. Book-to-bill for the quarter was above 1 for optical communications and below 1 for commercial lasers. Overall, CCOP book-to-bill was greater than 1. Revenue for optical communications was $176.2 million, up 14.3% from Q4, with telecom, datacom, and gesture recognition all recording double-digit percentage growth. Commercial lasers recorded $28.4 million of revenue, up slightly from $28.2 million in the prior quarter, as demand for lasers and semiconductor applications offset softness in other microfabrication applications and a flat quarter for fiber lasers. Demand for 40/100G telecom solutions was healthy in Q1. We continue to expect to participate in 100G adoption in China and believe that opportunity should begin building in calendar 2014. The increase we're seeing in telecom demand is usually an indicator of future demand for transmission products that support metro and access networks, including our tunable XFP and tunable SFP+. Our TrueFlex ROADMs grew as expected, tripling off a small revenue base from Q4, as we completed qualifications and started to ramp into live network deployments. Tom said, cloud networking is driving growth in our datacom business. We have a strong product pipeline for this market and excellent customer engagement for our 10G, 40G, and 100G solutions. Optical communications revenue from products less than 2 years old was a record 68%. As indicated earlier, our gesture recognition business grew significantly in Q1. We expect a decline in Q2, but remain excited about new gesture applications we are working on with multiple customers. CCOP gross margin increased in Q1 to 32%, up from 30.9% in Q4. Gross margin for our optical communications business was 29.5%, up from 28.2% the prior quarter, due to increased revenue and continued operational improvements. Gross margin for commercial lasers was 47.5%, up from 45.4% the prior quarter. Optical communications average selling price in Q1 decreased 2.6%, below the midpoint of our quarterly expectations. CCOP segment operating margin for the quarter was 13.3%, above our guidance range of 10 to 12% due to the significant increase in revenue, good control of operating expenses, and continued improvement in product cost reduction. Moving to network and service enablement, NSC revenue was $171.9 million, down 9.4% from Q4. As Tom mentioned, customers are currently focused on network enablement solutions to increase network capacity. As a result, NSC's broadband and networking portfolio, including 100G, FTTX, and broadband access products, grew 17% year-on-year versus market growth of just 5%. Mobility network enablement strength and capacity test, drive test, and protocol test partially offset the slow rollout of LTE in Asia-Pac. For RF test, we secured 10 new customers and won significant deals in EMEA and Latin America. NSC's cloud and data center business maintained share during the quarter, and we have seen strong pre-bookings for the new 40G version of our X-Gigs storage solution, which is optimized for both lab and portable field service and data center applications. As Tom mentioned, service enablement solutions from NSC's network visibility and control segment lagged as the industry focuses on core network expansion. NSC revenue from new products was healthy at 60% for the quarter. NSC gross margin was 62.1%, up from 60.1% last quarter as expected. Net inventory declined $4.8 million with global turns improving to 6.3. Operating expenses of $82.4 million decreased $300,000 sequentially, but were up $6.6 million year over year, primarily due to acquisitions in fiscal 2013 and ongoing R&D investments. This resulted in an operating margin of 7.3% compared to 9.5% in June on higher revenue and 9.9% last year. Switching to OSP, OSP revenue for Q1 was $52.5 million, an increase of 6.7% from Q4, but down 7.1% from Q1 of fiscal 2013. OSP sequential growth was driven by strength in our security pigments used primarily for banknote anti-counterfeiting. OSP's thin film products, an element of our gesture recognition solution, also grew in Q1 due to the ramp of our gaming application. OSP gross margins increased in Q1 to 49.9% from 49.2% in Q4 due to higher revenue, favorable product mix, and better factory utilization. OSP segment operating margin for the quarter was 36.4% at the high end of its target model. As we announced in August, we are exiting several OSP product lines that no longer meet our performance requirements. These include certain thin film coating products for the office automation, custom display, and solar markets, representing approximately $6 million of revenue per quarter historically. We'd originally planned to complete these exits by December. We'll extend production into the March quarter based on customer requests. Accordingly, we expect customer last-time buys to have a positive impact on revenue in fiscal Q2 and Q3, but with some margin pressure due to product mix. After we complete these product line exits, we expect our profit margins to improve, and we'll evaluate revising our target model for OSP upward at that time. Now to our Q2 guidance. As Tom indicated, Q1 bookings varied with strength in optical communications but lighter NSC bookings. Looking forward in NSC, we expect a mid-single-digit budget flush from cable operators but are not currently including telecom budget flush in our guidance. In CCOP, we expect higher optical communications revenue in telecom and datacom that will offset the expected decline in gesture and lower lasers revenue due to slower demand for lasers used in micro-machining. In OSP, we expect higher revenue driven by last-time buys for product lines we are exiting. Specifically, then, on a sequential basis, we expect NSC revenue to be flat to up 5%, CCOP revenue to be approximately flat, plus or minus 2%, and OSP revenue to increase between 2 to 5%. We expect our operating expenses to increase 2 to 3%, reflecting primarily annual merit increases. Now, looking at the operating margins for the segments, we expect NSC operating margin to be 8 to 10%, CCOP operating margin to be 12 to 14%, and OSP operating margin to be 34 to 36%. We expect net expense for taxes, interest, and other income to be approximately 5 to 7 million. We expect our share count for calculating EPS to be approximately 237 million shares, lower than last quarter given our 7.4 million share concurrent buyback in Q1. We expect capital equipment purchases to be 3 to 4% of revenue. To Taking into consideration the factors above, we expect second quarter revenue to be between $420 million and $440 million, and our non-GAAP operating margin to be between 8.5% and 10.5%. I would now like to turn the call back over to Tom.
JDSU continues to deliver solid results in a dynamic environment. A consistent focus on our strategic priorities, including collaborative innovation, and the balance that our diversified portfolio provides are key drivers of this performance. In our network-related businesses, solutions that support core network capacity expansion performed well as industry investment is currently focused in this area. While small cell and LTE deployments have been delayed, and the timing of these projects are difficult to predict, we believe we are well positioned for these opportunities, as well as increased demand for service enablement solutions that typically follows periods of network expansion. I am pleased with the profitable performance of our OSP business, as we exit legacy product lines and position a business for the best opportunities in the market it serves. And finally, we are excited about our expanding market opportunities and the momentum we are seeing in our gesture recognition and commercial laser businesses. With that, operator, please open the lines for Q&A.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star followed by one on your phone. If your question has been answered or you would like to withdraw your question, press star followed by two. Questions will be taken in the order received. Please press star one to begin. And your first question comes from the line of Mark Sue with RBC Capital Markets.
Thank you. I'm trying to get a sense of the lack of growth within the test and measurement NSE's segment. It's been flattened down for almost eight quarters now in a row. And if I look at it from even on an annual basis, it's down almost $60 million on an annual basis from its peak. And that's despite adding some of the acquisitions. So it comes down to investors asking us, is it really the timing? It's been quite some time since we've actually seen that growth, that business grow. How long should we wait? Is it execution? Is it competition? Any granularity in terms of region or segment, LTE, field test, or anything like that would be helpful in just understanding what you might do to grow this business going ahead.
Okay, I'll take the first part of that, Mark, and I'll turn it over to David Hurd. I think some of your questions or parts of your question around, is it competition? We believe in the traditional part of our test business, we're actually winning share. In the instruments, field test instruments, we're winning share, and we believe we're expanding quickly into the mobility and network visibility parts of the business. So I don't think it's a competitive issue. We do believe that the network operator spending has been quite lumpy, and we expect that will start rectifying itself as we get into the first part of next calendar year as the small cell deployment and the things like LTE deployment pick up. David, do you have additional color to add to that?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Tom. Yeah, I think year over year, I think on revenue, we were up about 1% and 4% when you take into account the fact that, over the last 2 years, we talked about taking out some of those legacy low-speed products that aren't going to be appropriate as we look to the forward direction of the network. And so I think we've put the investments in the right place. I think you're going to see a lot more software driven across the platform, which you're seeing in the uplift of the gross margins. We're investing in that now because we are engaged with the operators and we know what their needs are on a forward basis. I think if you look at us now versus 2 years ago, Mark, we're now around 40%, or in the wireless and mobile infrastructure field where we weren't. That is where the spend is going. When you look at the ecosystem, I think you're just seeing a bit of a delay in the spend as carriers move from the macro LTE base station build-out for initial coverage down into capacity and application performance into small cell deployment that was supposed to happen kind of back half of the calendar year this year that now looks like it's going to be the first half of the calendar next year. So I think we feel pretty good about where we put the investments. We are starting to see that growth, and we are starting to see both our funnel fill as well as the match to what the customers are going to need in service enablement. And we are taking share in that ultra broadband piece of our business while we have an improved business model.
With the focus of pruning the portfolio in test and measurement and overall, does that mean we should actually think about, should we even factor revenue growth in this business going ahead, looking forward, or is it more higher profit contributions that we should think about? Because considering it's been several quarters in a row where you would meet and then kind of lower the outlook, and I think a lot of it is just related to this business. So maybe all the analysts can kind of revisit whether the market really is growing and maybe your assumptions for that.
Yeah, I think good question. I think when we look at the market on a go-forward basis, I think as we mentioned at our last earnings call, I think a good portion of that pruning is really behind us as we look forward. I think what we've experienced as we look at our first quarter and we look at our outlook for the first half of the year is indeed around that large portion of the spend that is around the mobile architecture moving to small cell and SDN. So, you know, fundamentally, I think our competitors in the industry believe that is a growing market. We continue to believe that's a growing market. We're investing in stickier software that will be reoccurring and build a more solid business model going forward.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Thanks, Mark.
Your next question comes from the line of Kent Schofield with Goldman Sachs.
The NSC question, as we think about the operating structure of that business and look at the operating margins, are there any plans to look at that until we get the ramp up in spend, or do you think with the R&D projects and such that you'll continue at current spend levels?
Well, I think, you know, we have shown the improvement in the gross margin, so I think, you know, we're on track with the mix and what we're doing in the supply chain to continue to improve the gross margins. I think from an operating expense standpoint, we have been investing heavily, especially in the new software developments, where that is not showing up into the revenue yet. So we will continue to invest in the software. It's a matter of the timing, and some of these network visibility solutions is really a matter of timing when that starts showing up in the revenue and offsets that, you know, those additional operating expenses. Then we did have an acquisition in the pure software space that, you know, we, again, are until we have the revenue recognition caught up in the Q3 and Q4 of this fiscal year, we'll see the expenses, but not really much of a realization of revenue. So I think there are other areas where we're reducing operating expenses and gaining efficiencies. We put some new tools in for the sales and direct sales and sales channels, and we expect that will gain us some efficiencies as we go forward, as those tools have really just been implemented in the last couple of quarters.
Okay, and then you did mention for September some weakness around federal. Is that all significant, something that we should expect to continue going into the December quarter, or was that more of a modest impact?
David, do you want to take that?
Sure, yeah. You know, typically September ends our year with the federal government, U.S. federal government. So, you know, we had some muted expectations built into the quarter given the sequester, but we did not have built in a shutdown of the supply chain, which did have an impact. You know, we don't believe that's a go-forward. Well, some budget was lost for the fiscal year for last year. The needs are still there in the government, so we believe we'll see that roll out as again, back to timing as we get to the remainder of our year and their new fiscal year. But typically, okay. this month is typically very heavy. The last month of the Q1 is typically over 60% of our government business for that quarter, 60 to 70%. And again, we did not expect a complete shutdown of the supply chain.
Okay, thanks for the detail.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Alex Henderson with Needham & Company.
Great. Actually, perfect timing. I was hoping you could just give us some sense of the size of the government business relative to, you know, how much exposure there is. And, you know, obviously the September quarter is their fiscal year end, so is that a meaningful issue in the December quarter, just to follow up on that. But what's the rough scaling of that, on a seasonal basis?
I think from a government exposure, most of what we saw as far as the downward pressure was in the NSC side of the business. So, again, I asked David if he can give a little more color on that.
Yeah, again, Q1 typically is when we factor in our largest government quarter, which also tends to be book ship turns business. So it's a lot milder and already contemplated into our Q2
of the quarter?
Side. Pardon?
Is it 10% of your revenues in the quarter, and is it less than 5% or so in typical quarters?
It's about double the effect in Q1 than it is normally.
Yeah, but what's the size of the business relative that we're talking about here? Is it 5 or 10% of the NSC revenues?
Of NSC total, you're in the 5, 6, 7% of total revenue annually.
Great, thanks. The second question
and typically heavier weighting in the September quarter.
The second question is, you've talked a lot about supply chain realignment and cost cutting, and you spent a year and a half trying to really address the cost side of the equation. We were supposed to be seeing a margin expansion story in the test and measurement business over time. You've got target margins in the 20 to 23% vicinity, and yet here we are in single digits for guidance that is way below what is normally normal margins in what is a seasonally strong quarter for the December quarter typically. So how do we get any confidence in the rebound in the margin percentages in the test and measurement segment as we go forward?
Alex, part of that relies, as we said in our model, on the revenue level. So we, the model calls for $215 million or more per quarter. We've been pretty far off of that on a quarterly basis right now. And, as you look around the industry, I think it's, being seen by most of our competitors as well, if not all of them, that there's been a softness out of the network operators right now. So, again, we brought the gross margins up about 2.5 percentage points quarter on quarter, and we expect that to continue to improve. So we think we're in good shape on driving the gross margin improvements. The key to getting to the operating income is the top-line growth, and then also starting to see the spend on the software development level off, and then that start generating revenue at a higher gross margin than the average in this kind of mid 60% level. Will be much higher than that.
Yeah, last question on the same subject though. You also made a comment that you're expecting seasonality to substantially diminish. Can you elucidate what you meant by that and why that would occur?
Hey, we said that specifically around gesture recognition, and what's happening now is that our initial customer is in the gaming industry, and a lot of those sales build up for the Christmas season. As we get into some of these other applications, we don't think it's going to be as seasonal, based around the Christmas season as the gaming product. So as those start layering on, we'll see less of that seasonality effect. With the gaming products right now, we're seeing that ramp to the December quarter, and that starts dropping off for a quarter or two.
Great, thanks.
Yeah. Your next question comes from the line of James Kistner with Jefferies LLC.
Thank you. I guess I want to just drill down a little bit on Packet Portal. I believe in February at your analyst day, you guys said that you thought you would do 10 to 15 million this year in Packet Portal revenue. I'm kind of wondering sort of where we are, and do you still expect to hit that kind of number for Packet Portal? And just separately, on seasonality on Comtest, does it make sense that Q1 would kind of be less than historical given, calendar Q1 would be less than historical given the lack of flush in Q4, calendar Q4? Thanks.
David, you want to address those two?
Yeah, that's fine. So I think, and to Alex's earlier point, I think when you look year over year at the NSC business model, and you look at what we're investing both in Packet Portal in building up a book of business to move forward on that sticky software revenue, as well as our software acquisitions, you're seeing kind of a, as Rex mentioned in the script, a $6 million impact to that bottom line, that two things are happening. One, we're not yet realizing the revenue and getting the gross margins, which would even be more improved than, the 62.1 that we were at. And number two, you see it as kind of a year-over-year negative impact to the bottom line. So, you know, as we continue with our software acquisition booking business in a growing space, again, a little bit more muted due to software architectures where our customers are going, but equally bullish on a go-forward basis. And the same for Packet Portal. We expect that to improve. To the range, based on a bit of the shift of timing, I think currently now we're still looking at the low end of that Packet Portal range. You know, we've added three new customers in quarter. We've got 47 plus trials now complete. We've got two new partners that we signed up in terms of go-to-market with the product, and we have a unique new application going out around that small cell technology that, you know, we expect to really help us as we get to commercial market. And as Tom mentioned, that'll have significant uplift to the model and be able to show the hard work that we have done over the last 2 years.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Joseph Wolf with Barclays.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Tavi Reltner for Joseph. I was wondering if you could give us a raw revenue trend by segment for each of the geographies.
I don't think we provide geographic breakdown by business unit.
No, we don't. We can give it overall, which is typically what we...
Yeah, something, not something precise, just to see some kind of trend.
What we typically do for the company, I mean, the if you look over the long haul, U.S. the North America tends to be around half, with the balance split between EMEA and Asia Pac. We have not been breaking that down by segment.
Okay, thank you. That's all for me.
Your next question comes from the line of Troy Jensen with Piper.
Hey, congrats on the nice quarter, gentlemen.
Thanks, Troy.
Yeah, I'll give David a break. Maybe a question for Alan here. I know you guys talked about, you know, CCOP being flat, but, you know, gesture being down and data and telco being up. Is there any way you guys can just quantify the growth that you expect to see in the data and telco segment here in the December quarter?
Yeah, thanks, Troy. I was feeling a little lonely and left out here. Yeah, I think, you know, as Tom mentioned, the gesture recognition is seasonal, and the peak season or quarter for us is the September quarter. So we're seeing a considerable drop in gesture in the December quarter. That is, and we're also seeing a softening in lasers. But both of those reductions in revenue are really offset by continued double-digit growth in datacom and telecom. And just for a data point, our telecom bookings in fiscal Q1 increased from Q4 by 60%. And so we think it's a pretty good indicator that we're, you know, back in the beginning of a pretty strong telecom build out.
So could you, did you say bookings were up 60% or 16?
6-0. Given the June quarter was light, but if you remember, we had record bookings in the June quarter overall, but our telecom bookings were up 60% in the September quarter.
Wow, okay, perfect. Okay, and then, Alan, just to follow up, CCOP margins were the highest they've been in 2 years. If you could just touch on that, and maybe some thoughts on the pricing negotiation, what it means to 2014.
Well, I mean, pricing is always a challenge in our business, in our industry, and what we focus on is driving continued operational improvements and supply chain improvements, and we're continuing to make good progress there. So, you know, as we said, 2.6% reduction in the September quarter. Typically, that's larger in the March quarter, and we'll see what happens in the current quarter. But we're not expecting anything out of the norm for the December quarter from typical price reduction. Was there a second part of your question, Troy?
I guess I was thinking more of the negotiations for 2014, calendar 14.
Well, they're ongoing now. We've settled a few of them already and trying to get ahead of, you know, some of the uncertainty that the competitive landscape has created opportunities to close business earlier. You know, and some of the changes in the landscape provide us that opportunity to go ahead and lock in share for 2014. So I think from that perspective, we're pretty happy with where we are with our customer engagements and negotiations for 14.
All right. Good luck, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Genovese with MKM Partners.
Thanks for the question. I guess my question is about the CapEx environment in general, and specifically, did something happen in October, in service provider CapEx? Did things get a little bit worse? And if you could just comment, about the two sides, NSE and CCOP, if you're seeing any different CapEx trends across those two businesses, or if you can characterize CapEx spending overall, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah. And I think you said October. I'm not sure if you meant September, but what we've been talking about is the September quarter. So we did see as we mentioned in the script, trends where we saw more of a focus on the core build out with 100G. Really building out the core, and we saw really delays in the deployment of the small cells and LTE, especially TD LTE in China. I think we're all aware of that. So we did see some bifurcation there where there's a lot more spending in the core part of the business and less out into the mobility and the edge than we expected. So it was a little bit more lopsided than we expected. We do believe that eventually that rights itself as, typically there's a lag in time and then we start building out the metro and out to the edge. And we do believe that LTE is going to continue to build out strong. So there was quite a split there this past quarter. We think that's going to start improving as we get into beginning of next calendar year.
And your next question comes from the line of Patrick Newton with Stifel.
Yeah, thanks for taking my questions. I guess just dovetailing off that comment on China pushouts on TD-LTE, I was wondering if you could help us understand what type of contribution you have from these the Chinese rollouts built into your December quarter guidance. And then you seem to have a reasonable degree of confidence that these LTE rollouts, I'm sorry, the TD-LTE rollout, as well as a small cell, I'm assuming that's more North American and other geography focused, accelerating. Can you help us understand why, what gives you that degree of confidence?
Yeah, so first of all, I think as far as what we've built into the December quarter for the TD-LT build-outs in China is very limited. We do have some volume built into our optical components businesses, again, for the build-out of the 100G, as we're starting to see some of that happen, although still at a pretty small scale. And then we suspect from our discussions with the operators in China that we're really going to see more of the TD-LT build-out that will affect the NSC business more at the beginning of next calendar year 2014.
And then the confidence on the kind of small cell and LTE?
Yeah, we have a high level of confidence that that's a technology that is going to roll out. We do believe it adds some complexity and some new technical challenges because of where these are deployed on sides of buildings, up poles, et cetera, and trying to get these two all be able to talk to each other and all the backhaul capabilities that are going to need to come off these small cells. So we do believe it's going to happen. We see it on the roadmaps of our major customers, but we do believe they're working through some initial technical issues before they get these out in the field in large numbers. I think the complexity there is if they are deployed in the field and there's issues with them, the OPEX related to supporting them is very high as compared to a macro cell. So I think there's a lot of testing out happening today and ensuring that the technology is pretty bulletproof before it rolls out into the field.
Okay, and then one, I guess, a couple of CCOP questions for Alan and or Rex. On the optical side, can you comment on where lead times stand in general? I'm curious if you're seeing any capacity constraints across your portfolio or any extension of lead times across any specific products. And then while on the subject of optical, did VMI, the issue that was prevalent last quarter, did that snap back in the September quarter as a percentage of revenue?
Let me get the VMI number while I answer this question. On the lead times, I mean, what we've seen, and I think in the last two earnings calls, I've said we've been constrained on 100G modulators, and we continue to be constrained on 100G modulators, while at the same time hiring people in our Bloomfield facility to grow with the demand, as well as CapEx to grow our capacity in our modulator line. And we expect continued growth through FY14 on that. So lead times for modulators are challenged today, but we are putting in VMIs on most other products to be able to respond to our customer demand changes, because it's uncertain what they need, when they need it, and we just need to be able to be there for them and support them. As far as VMI is concerned, optical comms VMI last quarter was 38%, and I think one of the things we saw last quarter was, because some of the concerns over lead times, we did see some hard orders from customers who typically took VMI, and I think that really stabilized the VMI. So I don't think we'll see any changes with respect to VMI as we go forward in our business.
Great. And then just one more on the NSE side, David. I have to just keep drilling down on this one on the operating target. If I take your midpoint of revenue guidance, in essence, relative to your targeted model, you're about 40 million light in the December quarter guide. And on an operating margin side, you'd be about 30 million light. So you have somewhere around, you know, a 70 to 75% type of incremental operating margin. Even if I take into account kind of the 6 million of software investments that haven't really been levered on a revenue side, that's still a 60%, you know, incremental operating margin. I think we all just struggle to see how this target is obtained, even with some of the, you know, the clear pushes you guys have made to software. Any more comments would be appreciated.
Yeah, no, that's great. So again, if you look at Q1 as a proxy and you look at gross margins as 62.1 on that level of revenue without software realization, revenue recognition realization, that would take the gross margins of that up. Again, that has about a $6 million swing to the bottom line of where we're at today. If you look at kind of the current environment around Nokia, Siemens, and everybody else that's talked about the wireless deployments being down and, again, shifted to the right, it is volume-based. And so we had a different mix in our quarter due to the government the government push, and the lack of that mobility piece tends to be higher-margin business for us. So there's probably another 2 points just on mix that we were off in quarter, and that's where you see the benefits of the work we've done on the supply chain. So as we return to, again, all of the things we're investing in are location intelligence, small cell, all the things that the carriers are saying they absolutely have to go spend on and are making the architectural decisions to do so. You're seeing M&A happen in that field because people believe with capital that these are spaces and network visibility where they want to be, that as we get that volume, we should be well on schedule and ahead of pace to the 64 to 66 on the gross margin level. And as the revenue recognition happens, both for the acquisitions and software, as the deferred revenue falls off, and as we begin to realize the new bookings that we're continuing to see, you know, I think we're feeling comfortable that that's why we're continuing the investment. We've moved OPEX dollars out of legacy areas into places we believe where the puck is going. Hopefully that helps.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Amitabh Passi with UBS.
Hi, thank you. I had a few questions on NSC as well. David, I appreciate the fact that the segment grew 1% plus in the September quarter on a year-over-year basis in terms of how you reported revenues. but the guidance implies about a 10% decline, and if I assume normal seasonality, it looks like we're going to see somewhere between 9 and 10% declines through the rest of the fiscal year. So I guess the question for you was, at this stage, is normal seasonality the right assumption as we go into the March and June quarters, just given how muted December is? I apologize if you answered that before. And then related to that, what should we be thinking about Arieso and its contribution in the March and June quarters?
Yeah, so again, we're not guiding out into the first calendar quarter, but I think due to the timing of the shutdown on the government side and the slowdown on the carrier side of orders in our first fiscal quarter, I think that's, you know, we're expecting to see a book-to-bill above one for Q2. I think it's a timing issue in terms of the release of orders that's contemplated into our guidance. You know, as we move forward, I'll let Rex, you know, handle the financial assumptions around the prior acquisitions that we've made. But again, we're not yet into substantial revenue recognition in this first half of the year as we described when we did the acquisition. But it again remains a very exciting space. We continue to see new bookings, new customers in location intelligence, and I think you're seeing a lot about that in the industry, a lot of excitement and need for that from our customer base. Rex?
Yeah, I mean, Tom, and on the most recent acquisition, I would stick with what we've said 3 to 6 months ago, which is that we are expecting that acquisition to be have a positive impact from a gross margin perspective by Q3 and to be break even or better on the bottom line by Q4. We're still driving to that, and I don't see any reason why we would want to correct that. From a bookings perspective, you do have input or visibility into what they did last year, and you know, we have represented it as a growth business, and I think that still holds true. To David's point, the revenue recognition side of it is the harder part. So encourage people to track it on a bookings and cash standpoint. But we would expect to see that kicking in over the next, I'd say, 1 to 3 quarters.
And then maybe as a follow-up, is there a way to think about how big the China opportunity could be for NSE? I think a lot of clients struggle trying to even both size the opportunity and also assign a probability to you getting a piece of that business in the NSE side. So any help there, David, would be much appreciated.
Yeah, you know, so obviously those are the three, you know, the two largest operators in the world are there in China. I think we're well positioned with them on a daily basis as they go to deploy. I don't think we're ready to talk about that as a percent of business. I think we're optimistic based on the current plans and design wins we're getting in that market and feel good, as I think we've been consistent on this, talking about that being a first half calendar or a second half of our fiscal year uplift on our business.
Okay, and then just final one for me, for I guess anyone here, any updated thoughts on the use of cash but on your balance sheet at this stage?
Yeah, no, I think, again, our primary use of the cash would be, you know, looking at strategic acquisitions that would be meaningful to where we want to go strategically and filling out our portfolio. So we would continue to follow down that path.
Okay, I'll step back in queue. Thanks.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Mark McKechnie with Evercore.
Oh, great. Thanks for taking my questions. A couple of clarifying questions. I apologize. I missed some of it. But first, on your revenue OPEX guide, when I plug that into my model, it seems like we're talking about gross margins going up, am I right, sequentially? Rex, can you talk about how you expect gross margins to move next quarter or this quarter?
Yeah, so if you run the guidance that we gave, you would see to get to the operating margin targets, you would have to have an uplift on it, two of the main business units, so CCOP and on NSE. I would expect because of the mix issue we mentioned in the script, the OSP margins are going to decline a little bit, but that's a smaller impact on a smaller business.
Gotcha. And then to clarify on CCOP, if you your optical communications up 14% sequential, you know, bookings up, would you say 60% sequential. So when you guided that overall group flat, do you, on a sequential basis, are you expecting another, you know, double-digit sequential growth on optical comms and a decline in the laser? Or if you can clarify that for me.
Yeah, hi, this is Alan, Mark. Just to clarify the comment I made about 60% increase in bookings is specific to telecom in the September quarter, so not overall optical comms. And we do expect revenue to be down in gesture recognition in December quarter due to seasonality, as well as revenue in lasers to be down. So both datacom and telecom we expect to grow in the December quarter to offset some of that other softness we see in gesture and lasers.
Okay, good. That's helpful. And then finally, just a thought on the NSE business. You know, if we're looking at no flush for December, and we've heard that from a lot of carriers, right, that are equipment vendors into the carrier space, that December we're not getting that flush, we're not expecting the flush. Folks asked about that seasonality into March. You know, I'd have to think, yeah, March, you'd buck the trend for sure on seasonality if you know, China Mobile starts kicking up and you don't have that that budget flush in December. I mean, could that be a flattish to down quarter, or how are we looking at March?
Yeah, I think as David mentioned, we're not forecasting out into March, but if I do think back on previous years where we had almost zero budget flush, we did see less of a drop in the March, you know, quarter. So, you know, we would expect that type of a pattern if, in fact, we don't get any budget flush in December.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your phone. If your question has been answered or you'd like to withdraw your question, press star followed by 2. And your next question comes from the line of Simone Leopold with Raymond James.
Hi, guys. This is Georgios Kyriakopoulos for Simon Leopold. First of all, a housekeeping question. You did not provide percent of sales for raw demetunable XFP, SFP products this quarter. Can you please give this to us?
Don't have it at my fingertips. ROADMs were slightly down, tunables were slightly down, and I think it was really a result of the carriers spending mostly, as Tom indicated, on the core network build-out. We do expect both ROADMs and tunables, both tunable SFP Plus and tunable XFP, to increase in the December quarter, and that's really reflected in some of the strong telecom bookings we saw last quarter, as well as ROADMs to grow as we've seen dramatic increase in demand for our TrueFlex products. And, in fact, that's another product I meant to mention with respect to capacity constraints. We're adding capacity to respond to that strong demand on our TrueFlex products.
Okay, and then I'm trying to understand your comment from last quarter when you mentioned the strongest booking in years for test measurement, or NSC. When do you expect to recognize revenue from these bookings? And given the weak guidance, is it fair to assume a less seasonal March quarter?
Yeah, I think, again, what we said last quarter on the bookings was it was the largest bookings we had in 8 to 10 quarters in NSC, and that we some of those larger orders would spread out over multiple quarters. So I think that's consistent and factual with what we're seeing happen. Again, as I said in previously, if we do not see budget flush in the December quarter, typically what we've seen in the March quarter is less of a percentage down than historical. So we'll just have to see how that plays out. We're not giving guidance for March yet, but that is typically what we would see.
Okay, then remaining on the test and measurement segment, historically wireless has driven upside in your test business, and I think you said that in fiscal 2013 reached 40% of revenue. Now with LTE deployments likely peaking in North America this year, how do you see this business shaping up over the next few quarters? And also, help us understand the need for your wireless test equipment as carriers add capacity versus deployments. Like, for example, you get a higher portion of carrier CapEx dollars when your customers add capacity or when they deploy new footprint?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So, again, I think what we saw is a shift as people are deploying small cells and more software in the network. You're seeing more of our spend, but you're not seeing the revenue right away. You're seeing gross margins over the last, over the last 2 years, if you trend it, constantly going up, and you're seeing our spend go up, and you'll see us cross the chasm as we get more revenue recognition of the products we've already sold and the new products launch. For mobility, you're just seeing a delay in the new small cell architecture, as Tom mentioned, more complicated to be able to hook up to the network. The core is being deployed out there in 100 gig. How you connect those small cells to the core, there are multiple architectures that do that. The good news is we are very well positioned with the test equipment and software to test small cells, which there's more of when you deploy for capacity, and players like Sprint that announced today that they'll be deploying small cells in 14. You're just seeing this over and over with the carriers talking about how they're going to use small cell technology. So we have the test equipment to actually test the cell, connecting them to the to that big core via Metro, which you heard players like Juniper talk about a shift in the spend going towards. We're number one in the Ethernet market, needing to deploy these small cells with very small probes to get network visibility is all what Packet Portal is about. And again, the new applications that we have to be able to allow carriers to do that. And so we really see that as a, again, back half of our fiscal, first half of our calendar, when we expected that to be the first half of our fiscal. And I think that's been corroborated by, you know, the entire ecosystem. And as a delay, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And it appears the when from our engagements is that first half of the calendar, second half of fiscal. And in particular, China, with the two largest mobile operators, same story, which I think we've been consistent on.
Okay. Looking at your geographic data, it seems that EMEA grew strongly this quarter, almost up 20%. Can you offer some color as to what products saw strength within that region, and how should we extrapolate the strength going forward?
Yeah, I think from EMEA standpoint, we did see an improvement. We don't see a strong trajectory in EMEA. We think we're coming off the bottom, but we really would not say that's an indicator of what's going to happen over the next quarters. We still think EMEA is going to be pretty cautious in their spending, and we still think that's going to be reasonably soft. One thing we did say that Americas are normally about 50% of our revenue in EMEA and Asia Pacific, about 25 each. We have seen Asia Pacific come up, and last quarter it was about 29%. So we are seeing a trend of APAC improving for us. And again, once the China rollout happens in a larger scale with 100G and the TDLT base stations, we believe that's probably going to increase some more in the future quarters. I think Alan's got an update to a previous question.
Yeah, just to get the specifics on percentage of optical comms from ROADMs and tunable XFP, SFP, ROADMs was approximately 17% of optical comms revenue, and tunable was approximately 12%, and both had book-to-bills of greater than one.
Okay, that's helpful. And then when I mentioned about EMA, can you give us some color which products or strength within that region? Do you see more strength in optical versus test?
Yeah, CCOP saw good growth in EMEA. I think, again, really based on deployments of the core network. And just because we ship a component or a module into EMEA doesn't necessarily mean it ends up in EMEA.
But I can say that the 100 gig amplifiers and things that would go into the core of the network were exceptionally strong.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jorge Rivas with Craig-Hallum.
Hello, guys. This is Jorge for Richard Shannon today. Thanks for taking my question. Sorry if I missed this from your prepared remarks, but did you say that TrueFlex grew three times from the fourth quarter?
Yeah, it was obviously off of a small base, but the revenue was up 3x from the previous quarter. So we're getting good traction there. It's starting to take hold, and we think that's going to be a strong performer for us.
Mm-hmm. And then when can we expect this product to reach the $1 million in sales quarterly? Is that something that can happen in the next two quarters?
Oh, it's already over $1 million.
Okay. And then on the datacom, so on the growth that you're seeing on the datacom, what are the products that are seeing the largest dollar growth contribution?
For datacom, our largest products are our 40 gig QSFP plus, but we've seen a lot of traction on the basic 10 gig SFP plus short reach modules, as well as we've been penetrating more customers with that product.
Okay, that's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this will conclude the question and answer portion of today's conference. I would now like to turn the call over to management for closing remarks.
Thank you, operator. As our call concludes, I'd like to thank our employees, business partners, and long-term shareholders for your interest in and continued support of JDSU. Have a great evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect. Have a great day.